The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell. On this week's episode, Sam Robson and Stuart Woodward join me to review all of the action from a thrilling J1 Match Day 29 played over the weekend, as sphincters begin to tighten at both ends of the table with just 5 games left in the season. The J-Talk Podcast starts now. What a weekend of top flight football it was, and it's my great pleasure to have Sam and Stuart along to round it all up. Firstly, Sam, welcome back to the pod, and you're just back from a trip to the US, I presume for pleasure rather than business. How was it, and what did you get up to?
Yeah, it's very good, thanks. I've just about recovered from the jet lag. Not that the early start for Japan helped this weekend. But yeah, I had a bit of a birthday family gathering in Las Vegas where I lost money consistently. And yeah, it kind of started off badly and just continued to get bad and worse. But yeah, I had a really good time. I got to meet family and whatnot. Got a little bit of a break during the international break. So yeah, that was good. But I'm refreshed and ready to go for the end of the season.
Vegas. All right. Well, that's quite a development. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Well, we might have to get some more details from that, from your trip, but off air, Sam, whatever you're prepared to share. And, Sam's just back from the US. Stuart's just back from the leafy confines of Mitsuzawa, where his F Marino side pulled to within a point of the summit. Welcome back, Stuart. I presume you're well.
Yes. Well, a little bit tired after this weekend. Full sporting activities, watching the football and catching the rugby at the pub on Sunday. Yep.
Terrific. All right. Well, a busy weekend for all of us. We'll jump into all of the games from Match Day 29 shortly. But just in general, Sam, when it comes to the title race, I guess the whole weekend could hardly have gone better from a neutral perspective, especially with how the games were spaced out, where new leaders Kashima obviously playing before FC Tokyo and Yokohama. They were away in Matsumoto on Friday night, so obviously Antlers could have gone 5 points clear of Tokyo and 6 ahead of F Marinos before they played on the Saturday. But Yamaga battling to a draw not only helped their own survival chances, but it gave the Chasers a chance to close the gap, which they did on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, the J-League has a habit of this. It always likes to condense it as we get towards the end of the season. It's very rare that you see a team completely just dominate towards the end of the season and pull away. So it's almost not that unexpected that Matsumoto got a point against Kashima. I thought, yeah, it's perfect for the league. I think you've probably got it down to a three-horse race now, but what a three-horse race is just a point between the three sides. And I mean, I take a braver man than me to try and call it at this point.
And Stuart, we were both obviously Matsumoto supporters on Friday night. Obviously, they're not bothered about doing FC Tokyo and Yokohama a favour. They're more interested in trying to survive in J1 themselves. But this has really thrown the title race wide open. I mean, obviously, with still 5 games to go, it was always going to be up in the air, regardless of what happened this weekend. But yeah, the fact that Tokyo have now gone level and Yokohama are just a point behind Kashima with still 15 to play for, it's just you're licking your lips, aren't you?
Yeah, so I was very happy at the results with the Kashima game. I thought, you know, there was no way after Matsumoto scored the early goal that they were going to hang on and beat Kashima. I just thought that it just wasn't going to happen. And with the penalty, was also a little bit kind of iffy. I think our friend was involved in that penalty.
Yes.
So he didn't look very, very convinced at his guilt. And an awful, awful night of rain for the Kashima fans to endure all that way to Matsumoto just to come away with that result. But it's a beautiful goal, I thought. It might come up on the referee's judgment, I think. The judgment video that they do every week. But yes, especially for Marinos, that really has helped us out, and may also have helped out FC Tokyo too, and any other contenders who want to make a try of it.
Yes, indeed. It was quite the occasion on Friday night. As Stuart has said, very wet conditions in Matsumoto, but a phenomenal crowd of just under 19,500 turned up. I mean, we know that Matsumoto are always well supported, home or away, but yeah, in these conditions on a Friday night, to get such a big crowd in such bad weather, I guess it's an indication of the predicament that Matsumoto are in, that the supporters want to try and urge their players along as much as they can. And you couldn't have had a bigger underdog in terms of the positions these two teams were in at the start of play, obviously, and they finished the match day in the same positions. But yeah, Matsumoto 17th, hosting the leaders, Kashima. I mean, they were battered 5-0 away in the reverse fixture back in match day 12. So, these fans turned up. They're hardy souls. And, for them, their side got off to the perfect start, as Stuart's mentioned it. A hint of offside, Sam, but I think Ryo Nagai was okay. A Kashima defender stepped out, but maybe just a fraction too late, as Nagai backheeled a long-range shot from Ryo Takahashi past Kwonsante.
Yeah, I thought initially it was offside, like I think everyone did, but it was shown on the replay. I think it's Yasushi Endo who was a bit slow getting out, so Nagai was playing onside, and he does a very well-worked improvised finish to kind of flick the shot through and then past Kwonsante. And it was a really well-deserved goal, actually, for Matsumoto, because, I mean, we've gone on about them being far too defensive for all season, but this game they actually kind of took it to Kashima for much of the first half. They played like three attacking midfielders. If you got Serginho, Sugimoto, and Yamato Machida all playing in behind the guy. So I think it kind of caught Kashima by surprise, and I thought they were full value for that lead. But then I think they took an injury to Serginho midway through that first half, and then from then on they brought Paulinho on. They sat back a little bit more, kind of invited the pressure on, because I thought if ever Kashima were there for the taking, it was on Friday. Because we go on about their injuries as well so often, but in this game they're without Inukai at the back, they're without their main central midfielders in Leo Silva and Kento Misao, and without Serginho up front, as well as a few other injuries that they'd have been on the bench, but extra squad depth and that. So I thought Kashima were really there for the taking. I don't think they played well at all. And to be honest, I think they'd probably be satisfied to have got away with the draw, because for that first half, I thought Matsumoto were the only team that were going to win that game. And even in the second half, Kashima didn't create too many chances. They got quite fortunate with the penalty. I think it is a penalty. It's not one that is always given, but there's a bit of grappling from the corner, and the referee spotted it, so he's given it, and yeah, they convert that. But even after that, Kashima didn't do a lot, so maybe Matsumoto were happy with the point, but I mean, I'd just like them to have been a little bit more not necessarily gung-ho about it, but a little bit more on the front foot after taking that lead to try and get a second, because yeah, Kashima are always going to create enough chances to get back into the game, and yeah, they pulled out that point. But fantastic anyway for Matsumoto, and they've left themselves with a chance of staying up.
Indeed. So yeah, they did lead for quite a long period in the game, didn't they? Yeah, Nagai gave them a ninth minute lead, and it wasn't until 13 minutes into the second half when ISA Wada equalised from the penalty spot after he took a tumble after coming together with Yuya Hashiuchi. Of course, I won't have it that he's done anything wrong there, Hashiuchi, but the referee, he's probably just about got that decision right, unfortunately. Poor old Yuya. Can't be helped, son. So Wada rolled in the penalty, and we're still half an hour to go. Stuart was expecting, we were probably all expecting Antlers to go on and win it, but another gutsy point for Matsumoto. It sounds from Sam's thoughts that Antlers might have been satisfied with it, considering the team they're able to put out, and a slightly off colour performance from them. There were chances for both teams to win it towards the end. Paulinho, who Sam's mentioned, came on for Serginho. His 25-yard strike was tipped over by Consente late on, and then Leandro, an Antlers substitute, headed their last chance well wide in the last couple of minutes. So, yeah, for where does this leave both teams then? Kashima now unbeaten in 8, of course, so that looks great on paper. And, of course, they do have wins over their two closest challengers in the table in that run of games, and they've beaten Cerezo Osaka as well in that run, which is Cerezo's only loss in their last 7 games. But this was another draw in which they've had to come back from an early deficit, the same as happened against Sapporo 2 match days ago. So, Stuart, does this result, does it give F. Marino's supporters and FC Tokyo supporters hope that, this juggernaut that we probably all expected would just roll to the title now that they had overtaken Tokyo, they might be, understandably wobbly, just simply for the fact that they've got so many players out?
Yeah, I really was happy with the result. It really was the probably the best thing that could have been expected for this match. And I thought there was going to be some divine intervention when Hayama Tanaka came on, and I thought he's going to score for us, because he was a Marinos player from 2000 to 2008, wearing Mazda Naoki's number 3. I thought definitely he's going to score. This is going to be a divine intervention in the league this time. But you saw him on the highlights, had a good try, but he didn't make it in the end. That was certainly made my Friday night, and I must admit I was giggling when the ball went in from the first goal.
And before we leave Antlers, Sam, I don't know if you caught it in the post match, but there was a video going around of Sean Madoy confronting some Antlers supporters in the away end at full time, presuming some of the Antlers ultras weren't all that satisfied with the going to the team second from bottom and only leaving with a draw. Sean Carroll actually sent that to me on Twitter, and I was unable to respond because I simply haven't seen Doy blow up like that. I presumed he was some sort of a footballing robot, some sort of genius plucked from another galaxy that just didn't really feel any emotion, just played beautiful football on a week-to-week basis. So to see him, obviously react so vehemently to what I presume was abuse from the away end was really eye-opening to me.
Yeah, it's definitely very strange. It doesn't seem to be within his character, at least from what I've seen, but maybe it shows the lack of players that Antlers had available that he was the one that had to go over and kind of discuss with the supporters, which, I mean, you can understand their frustration. I mean, we mentioned the weather, and that I think I was reading in the build-up to the game that because of the typhoon and the effects that's had, the journey across to Yamaga was even worse than normal. It was taking them longer than it would do for an ACL trip. And for them to have made such a journey in such poor conditions on a Friday, they definitely expected better than they received in this game. So, yeah, they're right to vent their fury. And, I mean, yeah, it's very odd that it was Shoma Doi, but, I mean, yeah, I don't really know how a player should react in that situation, because you have to admit that your team hasn't played well, but you've got to show passion as well, which I guess is what he's showing. But, I understand the frustrations all around.
All right, so I asked Stuart, and so I'll pose the same sort of question to you, Sam. What sort of effect does a result like this have on Antlers? We were all expecting them to go down and lay down a marker on Friday night. They, as we've said, they could have extended the gap in the live table to 5 points over Tokyo and 6 over Yokohama. And at the end of the match day, they found their advantage, which was minimal to start with, of course, completely wiped out. They only lead Tokyo in goal difference now and are a point ahead of F. Marinos. They've just got to wait for players to come back. Do you see other performances like that coming? Do you think they're simply going to be too limited to really express themselves and play the sort of football that we've come to expect from them?
I mean, it's got to cast doubts on them. Main benefit is they've got the game against Honda in the Emperor's Cup in midweek, but then they've got another 10 days before their next fixture. So I think Kento Misao's back in training. Maybe they can get a couple more back and go again, but their fixture list after that game is pretty difficult. They'd have had Matsumoto down as an easy 3 points. They'd have probably assumed that maybe before even going there. Obviously, they wouldn't have taken the game lightly, but they'd have expected 3 points. But now they've got Reds, they've got Kawasaki, they've got Hiroshima, they've got Kobe, and then Nagoya probably still fighting for relegation at that point. So that's five really difficult fixtures, and much more difficult than either of Tokyo's or Yokohama. So I think there has to be some doubts that creep into Antlers, which don't normally appear in this kind of machine that you just expect to go on and kind of ease through games. And yeah, to not beat Yamaga, not ever look like beating Yamaga, has to be a real blow for them. The only thing is they've got this time. Hopefully for them, they can rebuild and go again against Reds. I'm not sure if this Reds fixture will stay in that position. I'm not sure with Reds in the AECL. I don't know if that gets moved at all. I'm not really certain on the dates, but so that might be an extra break for them as well if that is moved for the ACL final.
All right, and yeah, you mentioned the fixtures there for Antlers. In the reverse fixtures, they drew against Urawa, Kawasaki, and Hiroshima with wins over Kobe and Nagoya. So yeah, it does look testing for Antlers the rest of the way. But yes, we know their championship pedigree. So yes, this promises to run this title race. And Matsumoto, well, we might come back to them later on after Stuart leaves us, Sam, when we wrap up the whole relegation dogfight picture. But it was another impressive result for them. They've got home draws against the current top two in the league in the last three match days. So while their football isn't always the easiest on the eye, you can't really argue with results like that when their J1 survival is on the line, and they continue to give themselves a puncher's chance of escaping the drop with five games to go. All right, so yeah, those two dropped points for Kashima on Friday night. Well, that result was a much-needed boost to FC Tokyo, who were wobbling like a drunk salaryman, staggering to get the last train home after just one win in their last six in the league. That run had, of course, seen their seven-point buffer at the top wiped away, but they knew a win would take them level on points with Antlers, obviously, after their result on Friday night. Vissel, meanwhile, needed to show a reaction to their 6-2 hammering down in Hiroshima when they hosted FC Tokyo, but they simply did not get going here, and before they knew it, they were 2-0 down, with Tokyo manager Kenta Hasegawa seemingly a new listener, as the cries of both myself and Scott McIntyre on the last J1 podcast for something a little different were heeded. So Kenta, it's at patreon.com/JTalkPod if you want to support us on Patreon. It was only a minor tactical shift, Sam, with Kensuke Nagai rested after international exertions, or dropped, whichever you prefer. Yojiro Takahagi pushed forward into the hole, and Arthur Silva handed a first league start in central midfield. But wouldn't you know it, those two players capped off for Tokyo's up-tempo start with the first two goals of the game.
Well, I did indeed. I thought it was maybe a masterstroke, maybe a little bit fortunate that Nagai was tired, so he was forced into a change. But it definitely released Takahagi, who I think has been a little bit limited, sitting a bit deeper this season. He's not really linked up with the forward players as well as he can do. And yeah, he was given license here, both by the changing system and by Kobe's defending. I thought he was superb, just going beyond Diego Oliveira, who would drop back. They seem to have very good understanding and good link-up throughout the game. And yeah, Takahagi was in the right place at the right time for the first goal. And then Arthur Silva, who in general play, I thought he was okay, nothing major. But when you can fire an absolute thunderbolt from the left-hand side of the box into the top corner for 2-0, you're worth your weight in gold at this point in the season. Yeah, it was a fantastic strike there. And I thought Tokyo as a whole were a little bit different, and I think that they were fresher than usual, and I think it caught Kobe off off guard a little bit, and I thought, especially first half, Tokyo were back to how they can play going forward. I'm thinking back to the Kashima game where you really took it to them for the first half. I thought it was quite similar in this game, and yeah, a really good performance first half from Tokyo. And but I mean, you can't have a game with Kobe without talking about how ludicrously awful they are defensively. Obviously, they were missing Thomas Vermaelen at the back. And without him, I mean, Dankler, Omari and Watanabe were absolute horror show. Especially the third goal. I mean, Diego Oliveira turns brilliantly, but what Watanabe is doing just sprinting past him is beyond me. Omari puts in a very weak challenge to a little rollover from Diego Oliveira, and then it's quite a simple pass through the middle, and no one's anywhere near it from a Kobe perspective. But again, very good play from Tokyo, and I thought they capitalised on a poor Kobe very well and played good football themselves.
Yeah, I guess it's an overused cliche in football, and I guess in sport as well, Stuart, that you know, a game means more than one team to another. But in this case, it's simply Kobe. I don't know, they were still on the beach after their 2 weeks off for the international break. They just never got going in this game, and Tokyo, yeah, were revved up from the start, and it's something that we haven't seen for a very long time. I mean, obviously that really brightened my Saturday afternoon, and you were enjoying yourself at Mitsuzawa as well, so you won't have been too worried about what Tokyo were doing. But I mean, yeah, you would have seen the goals. I mean, they're absolute quality, and yeah, while I'm wondering where this has come from, I just hope that it's the start of a really impressive last 6 weeks, because Tokyo could really build on something like this. It might mean a guy loses his spot in the starting lineup, which he has obviously kept pretty much the entire season. But this was a really impressive performance from Tokyo, and that's they have to play really, really well to get any positivity out of me.
Yeah, it's funny though. Like I do have a habit of looking at the scores of the other matches while I'm watching while I'm watching our match. And I think even I had like a notification kind of flashed up, and I took and I saw, oh dear, like FC Tokyo scored already. So like to, you know, kind of in real time, you know, I was feeling, you know, what was going on there, and then pretty soon after that, I think was the second goal too, and that one I think I caught on Twitter maybe at half time, and I thought, wow, that was a really astounding goal. That will probably be one of the contenders for goal of the year, and it might even be one of the turning points for the season. And I think with all of the matches, this might be whichever way it goes, this might be the turning point of the season.
Well, yeah, you said a potential goal of the season contender. I mean, this was a fella, yeah, making his first league start and 10 minutes into it. Yeah, an absolute rasper across the keeper from, 25 yards. It doesn't really do it justice, because he was right out on the edge of the box out by the left-hand side. An absolute corker of a shot to even consider it is an absolutely phenomenal way to announce yourself to, obviously the hardcore FC Tokyo supporters have seen Arthur Silva in some of the Levain Cup games this year, but they've not seen him do anything at all like that. And, I agree, Sam, he wasn't all that effective in open play. He did win the ball back for the first goal and played the ball in for Takahagi to flick on his header and then run on to the return pass from Keigo Higashi, who must have really gotten a nosebleed being that high up the pitch. But it was a well-worked goal, Takahagi scoring off the post in the 6th minute. Then Arthur Silva's a belter in the 10th. And a dominant first half hour from FC Tokyo was capped off in the 34th minute when Kento Hashimoto and Diego Oliveira combined. Hashimoto played in Oliveira, who, as Sam said, turned Hirofumi Watanabe like he literally wasn't there. And then, superbly set up Hashimoto, who had continued his run. Not surprisingly, when it comes to FC Tokyo these days, there were some nervous moments in the second half, especially after Almari had headed in Junior Tanaka's corner in the 66th minute. Takahagi had to clear off the line, and then Akihiro Hayashi saved superbly from the substitute, Lukas Podolski. But yes, hang on, Tokyo did. So we've spoken so many times about this, excuse me, eight-game away run of games that Tokyo have. Well, they're now six games into it. They've won two, drawn two, and lost two, with Oita and Iwata to finish before they return home to face Shonan in match day 32. So, Sam, I don't know, what do you reckon? Is this just about par, considering it's so many games away in a row? They had a big buffer that's been extinguished, but obviously the circumstances behind the two losses aren't great. But I don't know, would you say it's probably not quite par, is it? But 8 points out of 18 available from six straight games on the road, how would you rate that?
Okay, I think if you'd have beaten Yamagura away from home, I think that would have been par. But yeah, I think you've got to come away with it and almost out of it. I think you've got two pretty nice fixtures next. I mean, Oita, you never really know what you're getting with Oita, and then Jubilo, I mean, you should beat Jubilo. So if you come out of that and you're level on points, or maybe even slightly above Kashima and Yokohama, I think that's about where you'd hope to have been. I think if you're any less than that, I think it's slightly below par. But I think you've done okay. This is such a crucial victory, because I think if you hadn't beaten Kobe, I think you're in deep trouble. But yeah, I think you've got you should get the confidence back from such a victory. And leading into the final five games, I think, especially the next three, I think you would say you'd have to win all three to win the title, with Reds and then Marinos last two games of the season. So I think you're in a decent enough position. I think you'd probably accept it, even though I think you could have been a little bit better.
Yeah, and you say we should beat Iwata. Well, I'm certainly not counting any chickens, because in the two previous games, of course, we'd drawn away at Matsumoto and then lost, admittedly in farcical circumstances, at Tosu in the last match day. But yes, it's still very much all to play for, he says in a massive understatement, as Tokyo, yes, drew back a level on points with Antlers and trailed them on goal difference. While, yes, Stuart very much enjoyed his Saturday afternoon at Mitsuzawa, obviously with, Kashima's result still fresh in his mind. And his side hosted Shonan Bellmare in a Kanagawa derby. Well, these two teams, I said, with Matsumoto and Kashima, they could hardly have come in contrasting positions in the table. Well, when it came to this Kanagawa derby, these two teams were in vastly contrasting veins of form. F. Marinos led the way in the form table, were unbeaten in five with four of those wins, while, of course, Shonan were winless in six since Chokwije's enforced absence. And following his resignation during the international break, they were under new stewardship in the form of Bin Ukishima. And I tell you what, Shonan's season is just about to be put in the bin, I think, after another defeat. But Stuart, we know a derby can be unpredictable. Of course, Shonan upset your side in last year's Levain Cup final, so I guess it loomed as somewhat of a banana skin, but from the outside looking in, Bellmare just appear rudderless. It did take your side until just before half-time to break the deadlock. How did you, before we move on to talk about another impressive F. Marinos performance, if you could, a little bit about Shonan. I mean, did you get any sort of vibes off their supporters that they were, tired of flogging a dead horse? I mean, the players, did they appear up for it for a new coach? I mean, they're in a horror tailspin. Did you get a sense of that unfolding before you?
Well, for the supporters side, the supporters, Shonan supporters, always come out in force and in good voice throughout the match, like all right to the very end. They were supporting the team, but I felt like it was the Shonan players looked like quite frustrated quite a lot of the time, and the match started get a little bit niggly towards the end, and few, you know, funny little fouls going on. And I always felt that under Cho, his sides, previously Toss and then after that with Shonan, I've always played like to the edge, quite quite dirty and try to, you know, like make up for their lack of talent or players with just playing a bit hard and trying to get the win that way. But yes, it was a little bit. It seemed to be taking a long time up to the 39th minute before we had the goal. And I've been watching the scores for the FC Tokyo match, so we were really, you know, knew that we needed to win this one. But the goal came up actually kind of a little bit of a funny situation with that one, because Marinos were playing a 38th minute lost possession to Shonan, and Shonan like managed to lob the ball up and run for the counter, and then Park was way up the field, about a third of the way up the field, and then lobbed it straight back down the right hand side, where I thought it was going out for a throw in, but it just came down vertically almost onto the sideline, and Nakagawa seemed to trap it with his foot, and being onside, he took the ball up to the box and then crossed it to the three players waiting to tap it in. The two of them couldn't get it, and finally Matthias at the end picked it up and then just kicked it off the shins of the Shonan defender. But he quickly got the ball back and then retreated out of the box, and then within three passes, Teraton, Kida, back to Nakagawa, and he just scooped it over the defence and straight into the goal for his 12th goal of the season. And I, from where I was standing, I always stand at the corner on the behind the goal, like towards the corner side. It just looked like a mess with Nakagawa's cross, and it was such a good chance that he had there. And with all the errors, I just turned to my friend and said, "Well, that would have been a great goal if Nakagawa had scored with the assist by Park." And then almost as soon as I'd finished the sentence, I looked back and it was in the net. I don't even think I saw the goal. And I had to look on the highlights to see what had happened at that point. But after that, you know, I'm always a little bit edgy, and there were quite a few corners where we could have conceded a stupid equaliser, and Hatanaka then got a flying push in the back, and he was out for a few minutes. But you know, a few more chances came in. You know, at the end of the halftime, almost at halftime, we got Kida hit off the post, and that came in, and that could have easily bounced off somebody and gone in. And one thing I noticed this match was the ball boys were incredibly quick. I never seen them, you know, act so quick. I don't know if Angie has been having a word with them, Jose Mourinho, and because just before the extra time after the end of the half, the ball boy came running out, put the ball on the spot, and then immediately it was taken by Marinos for an extremely short corner, and even Dazon missed that. And I've never seen in all my time watching football a corner taken so quickly. I was half expecting the referee to blow the whistle to take it again, because it was so quickly. But things started to get a little bit more relaxed after the 50th minute. So the crossover from the left to the right side, and Nakagawa came running diagonally across and was brought down just in the edge of the penalty area. And I think Marcos and Matthias had made the best of it, giving, you know, like careful looks and whispers to each other about who's going to take it, you know, building up the tension. But I was actually very surprised that Matthias kicked it straight in from right over the wall. And that was as good as any Shunsuke free kick that I've seen. And Matthias looked really happy to have put that one in for his first goal for Marinos.
I was going to say, yeah, I thought that was his first goal for the club. So that's a little bit like Arthur Silva for FC Tokyo. I mean, we know Matthias is a he's a bit of a Yeah, he's an enigma wrapped in a riddle, but capable of the absolute spectacular, and he showed it there. I mean, that's a terrific way to, not introduce yourself, but, to make a splash in front of the home supporters for your first goal for the club.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So I think everybody's happy. You know, like, when he came, we didn't really know, you know, how he would fit in with the team, and seemed kind of like an opportunistic pickup in the transfer window, but he seems to be playing well, and he seems to have got a regular place in the side now, and useful, like I think they're playing about 50-50 with him and Keita in that position, so it's always good to have a kind of a mix of players there. But you know, 64th minute, got the penalty. The very, very high tackle on Keita. I thought the knee was going to go in his kidneys there. But, he also looked happy to give him the chance. And, Marcos put that in for his 14th goal. It was nice to see, Endo there, back, because he had a bad injury. Well, potentially bad injury in the last match. It was the Iwata match where he slid into the goalpost on his shoulder, and he had to drop out of the under-22 Brazil selection, which I think he'd been looking forward to go to. But I thought he'd broken his shoulder, broken his shoulder bone at that point. But it turned out to be, I guess, just a bruising, and so he was back. So, you know, that was almost like the icing on the cake at the 64th minute. But I think that really, it was one of those matches where we had like two fortunate goals with the free kick and the penalty. But Shonan, their goal at the end, that really showed that they are dangerous, and they, if they get the ball, then they can play to win. But I think we came away unscathed, but they didn't really look like they were going to do much for the game. I think, as I said, like a bit downhearted after all this trouble with their manager, and they're really in the down at the bottom, scraping the bottom at the moment.
Yes, it is definitely a horror run for Shonan. We might come back to them, as we will with Matsumoto, with Sam later on when we wrap up the relegation dogfight. But yes, it's another defeat for Shonan. Obviously, this could have been a cricket score. They were coming off consecutive home defeats, 6-0 and 5-0. So, I was half expecting Yokohama to hit double figures here, Sam. It did not eventuate, of course, but they showed the benefit of being able to push on and get that third goal that really iced the game with just over 20 minutes to go. We've talked throughout the season about Teruhito Nakagawa and his J1 Best 11 prospects, which are absolutely set in stone at the moment. I don't think anybody could argue that. And in fact, while Stuart was talking there, Sam, I was just thinking, obviously Nakagawa, as Stuart said, now has 12 goals on the season. Marcos Junior, the penalty has given him 14, which takes him top of the Golden Boot race. Can you think of a player who in the top three from Kashima or from FC Tokyo who has had as big an impact on their team's seasons? And obviously I'm talking only in terms of goals scored, but in attacking prowess in terms of assists that these two have gotten for each other, they might nearly be splitting the vote. But Sam, I can't really think of anybody else from the top three that would even be a possibility for player of the year other than these two. Does anybody spring to mind for you?
No, I've been thinking about this for a while, actually. There's no one that's done it with the same level of consistency. You could say, for a period, Diego Oliveira and Kensuke Nagai were linking well and just kind of building Tokyo forward, especially at the start of the season. And Kashima, no one's really stood out as, like, been the consistent threat. They've had little bits and pieces from various players, but it's been kind of an all-round performance from Kashima and, to an extent, from Tokyo as well. There's not really, like, a player that you'd say Maybe, I think it probably is Nakagawa, but otherwise, out from the rest of the teams, there's no one player say that he's definitely in with a chance of being the player of the year, and you can't even nail down positions for, like, a team of the year either, just using, like, Tokyo and Kashima. They're very, not to say that the Marinos isn't quite a well-rounded team as well, but I'd just say that they seem to have more, like, kind of star players that are kind of doing the work for them rather than, say, a Tokyo and Kashima, where it seems to be a little bit more well-rounded. But, yeah, but that's not to do a disservice to the rest of the Marinos team, who were playing very well. I just think that Marcos and Nakagawa, and then when he was fit, Edgar Jr., they were just a little bit of a step above in terms of their production, I mean consistent production, than the players at Tokyo and Kashima.
Well, yeah, you mentioned Edgar Jr. there, Sam. I mean, yeah, he is still in the top nine goal scorers in J1 with his 11 in just 16 appearances. So obviously, as Scott McIntyre likes to remind me, he would have scored probably about 50 if he had played the full season. But yes, Marcos leads the way with 14, and Nakagawa is joint fourth with Shinzo Kuroki and David Villa. That's a pretty good company for the wee man to be keeping with his 12 goals from his 29 appearances. So, well, before I go back to Stuart, Sam, yeah, anything you're really taking away from this game? Was this just a professional performance from F. Marinos in, well, I guess it wasn't the most heated of derbies, but, yeah, I mean, it could have been a potential danger match for them, but they appear to have handled things very professionally, as I say, after, yeah, taking a while to take the lead, but once they did, quality circumstances through Nakagawa, then getting a Mateus's free kick give them a really comfortable hold in the game early on in the second half, it appears to have gone pretty much to Ange Postecoglou's plans.
Yeah, I think this game and then probably the Jubilo game as well, the last fixture, I think they haven't necessarily been playing as well as they can do. They're not being as free-flowing as usual. And it's going to get, like, kind of gritty towards the end of the season. But they've shown that they can pull out results and just kind of keep going. They don't stray away from their principles. They don't lose patience at all. And they've just been able to just kind of motor on and just eventually know that the win will come. So I think I've been quite impressed with the kind of more tense victories, but the sort of victories you have to get at this stage of the season. Often a team that can be really pretty and look great going forward for most of the season, when it comes down to the bitter ends, they kind of crumble if things aren't going their way. But at the moment, Yokohama aren't showing any signs of that, and that can only be a positive going into the final five games.
All right then. So yeah, Stuart, you're about to leave us. We very much appreciate the time you've given us on a Monday night, especially after the busy weekend you've had. But before I let you go, and obviously we will be speaking again, I hope before the season comes to an end. But how are you enjoying this? Your side is, as I said at the intro to this game, they're top of the form table. They're firing on pretty much all cylinders and have done for the last month, 6 weeks or so, after a difficult patch where they, of course, lost three straight in the league. They've turned it around in a very impressive fashion. A point behind the leaders, the co-leaders with five games to play. Have things gotten better for a Yokohama supporter in the last 5 or 6 years? Obviously, you remember the pain of seeing the title slip away in 2013. You'll be hoping, of course, your team can go one better. But, we can worry about how the final day is going to work out later on. But, yeah, how are you enjoying the ride in this the second season of Ange Postecoglou in charge?
Well, I am. I'm very happy with the Ange Postecoglou's football, and it's been really, really fun to watch. Like from the very start, it was like last year was a bit of a roller coaster. kind of bit of a down to the relegation fight in the end, but that still, you know, every match was more interesting, and like in previous years, you know, like. You know, there'd been some booing when players didn't look like they were up to it, but The whole team in both years have been definitely trying hard, and it's been exciting to watch and really fun. And 2013, like it was, you know, coming up to the end of the season, and it looked like Marinos were going to get it. And that second from last match against Niigata, I still have memories of that match. And I don't know if I told you this story, but that Niigata match. We only had to win that, or the Kawasaki match following to win. So, since it was the last match of the season at home, all of the dignitaries had been invited there because it looked like we were going to take the title. You could see there were fireworks all arranged around the pitch to let off, but, you know, when they got the shield came out, but you know, we didn't. You know, win the match. So, you know, it was stalled until the next final match away at Kawasaki. But one of my friends, he was invited that time to watch from the VIP box because he was helping the club and you know, organizing some of the hometown activities, and as such gets, you know, a place for the in the VIP box for the last match of the season. So after the match, he came over and to our seats from the VIP box, and we were going out for a family meal together, and he took us over to the VIP area to take the lift down to the parking. So we were just expecting to go and get in the lift and straight down into his car and go out for something to eat. But when we got through the door at the VIP area, I suddenly found myself next to Shunsuke Nakamura and listening to the manager's speech and he was telling the mayor that we were going to win at Kawasaki and to organize the parade there. We'd sort of gate crashed the manager's post match talk with the team. So then we were kind of ushered into the elevator and then down into the down to the car park there. So that was a very funny part, but it was that end of the season. The Mariners were expecting to win, and it was all the pressure there on them. Now, being third, like I feel there's much less pressure. So I'm hoping that we're going to coast in I don't want to say take it on the last day, but it's definitely going to be the final run in is going to be very similar. You know, whoever's number one at the end will be under the pressure to hold it up if the points are this close. And also we really need the services of Hiroki Ikura to keep out the goals that when Kobe play Kashima. That's going to be here. He promised that he was going to keep a clean sheet against FC Tokyo and Kashima and Kawasaki for us, but I think he wasn't doing too well in the last few matches. So he still is our final hope.
Wow. No, surely yeah. Not. Surely not. Well, that's a very interesting story, though. No, I hadn't heard that before about, bumming into Shunsuke. So, bittersweet memories then of 2013. What a letdown at the end of the day. Of course, it was for F. Marinos after two chances to win it. And I tell you what, Stuart, if it does go down to the final day with both FC Tokyo and Yokohama in with a chance of the title, I will most definitely blow a gasket, regardless of which way it goes. That's going to be, I can't even imagine it's going to go that far for FC Tokyo. But yeah, after a performance like Saturday, I guess anything is possible. Sam, we've talked about the fixtures for Kashima and FC Tokyo. Yeah, before we let Stuart go, I mean, it probably will come down to those last two games, won't it? Because it's Kawasaki away and then FC Tokyo home in the last two after they travel to Tosu host Sapporo at Mitsuzawa and then head to Matsumoto. I tell you what, Matsumoto have been done over here, haven't they? That means they will have played the top three in the table, all admittedly at home, but in the space of 6 weeks. Obviously, when the fixtures came out, we weren't expecting FC Tokyo and Yokohama to be in the top three after they finished Tokyo 6th and Yokohama 12th last season. But it's just worked out that way for Yamaga. But I don't know, Sam, we're famed on this podcast for our rubbish predictions. Is there any way you see it going in a clear and concise manner at this stage with five matches to go? I mean, it's obviously pure folly to try and predict the results of individual J1 matches, but do you get a sense that momentum is with one of these three teams over the other two at this stage?
Well, I mean, if you're going just on momentum, I think it's with Yokohama.
Yeah, right.
But, I mean, it's just going to come down to that. Those last two fixtures are so good from a neutral perspective. To have away at Kawasaki and then at home at Tokyo. I really hope it goes to everyone's level on points going into the final day and I can just enjoy it while you all get a bit nervous and blow gaskets all over the place. But it's so difficult to predict because Kashima, even though they've drawn with Matsumoto, you do expect them to just eke out results. And Tokyo are the wild card in it because I don't necessarily trust Tokyo to get results, but they can play in the manner that they did against Kobe. So if especially with only five games to go, if they can get three or four performances like that, they're definitely in with a chance. And then I think Marinos' fixtures are quite nice before those final two games, so I see all three in it before the last two games, and then I just could go anywhere, and I've made enough rubbish predictions this season. I don't think Reds are coming to win the league at any point, so I'll just remain on the fence for now.
No, entirely understandable. Yeah, I mean, as I say, it's you certainly don't get rich trying to predict the results of J1 games. So we'll leave it there for now, Stuart. Sam and I will carry on and round up the rest of the games. But as I said, very much appreciate your time. It's obviously a week off again for F Marinos and FC Tokyo as well, of course, with Emperor's Cup this midweek that we are both not involved in, and then the Levain Cup final on Saturday. So F Marinos with a full 2 weeks to prepare for their trip to Tosu in match day 30. We'll look forward to catching up with you again before the season concludes, Stuart. Enjoy the 2 weeks off for F Marinos, and as I say, you look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Well, thank you very much, but I will be going to a football match on Sunday.
Oh, do share.
For my second club, FC Ryukyu, home against Omiya.
Home, you say?
Yes, FC Ryukyu, my first home match against Omiya, so a little bit of ground hopping to check out the stadium in Okinawa City.
That is absolutely outstanding. Have you been in touch with Okinawa Aussie yet?
No, well, I think a couple of months back I mentioned I was going, but I will send him a message. But I know quite a lot of fans who go to the matches regularly, so hopefully, so we should be hooking up with some people on the afterwards for a drink.
Yep. Absolutely, yes, Sandy. Yeah, very. Hope you enjoy that. That sounds brilliant.
Yeah, certainly will. Yeah, and thanks very much for having me tonight.
An absolute pleasure, as always. All right, well, thanks again to Stuart Woodward. After a quick hit of music, Sam and I will continue rounding up the rest of the games from J1 Match Day 29. Thanks again to Stuart, and Sam, let's continue rounding up the games from Match Day 29, and Hiroshima were on the road. They visited Shimizu, of course, off the back of their 6-2 tonking of Kobe the last time out. S-Pulse games are always entertaining, and they took the lead in a very entertaining fashion with a well-worked free kick routine that your boy Douglas scored at just past the half hour. It did appear, though, that Hiroshima were pretty much clued on about what was to come, but unfortunately for Yoshifumi Kashiwa, he mistimed his slide behind the wall and was unable to stop Douglas's free kick beating the keeper.
Yeah, it was unfortunate for him because they'd obviously done a bit of scouting, maybe know Douglas from his time at Hiroshima, and that could be a thing that he used to try there. But fair play to Douglas again. He's the only thing probably keeping Shimizu from being in the relegation zone. It's a really clever free kick, a little bit similar to the one the Colombia score against Japan in the World Cup, which Japan weren't alive to, but Hiroshima almost were here. But yeah, a really good free kick, another good performance from Douglas again. But I thought this game was really good, actually, in total. I thought both teams played good football, and I know that's rare to say about Hiroshima, but I think especially the last maybe month, 2 months, I think their football's improved a lot, especially with Morishima coming into the attacking midfield role. Him and Kawabe are linking up so well, and Morishima would be one of my picks for young player of the season. I think he's been terrific, and the interplay now, especially the equalising goal for Hiroshima, the 1-2 football, just working their way through Espoirs' defence, which I know is probably one of the more accommodating defences, but I thought they played really well. Great link-up play. Yes, Shifumi Kashiwa missed the interception on the free kick, but I thought he was superb. He got himself 2 assists. And I really like Hiroshima at the moment, which I never thought I'd say. But, yeah, they're playing good football. They're probably too far away to mount any serious title challenge. But, yeah, I think with the pressure off, they're starting to be a little bit more expansive and starting to be fairly reasonable to watch.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, wonders never cease, eh? But, yeah, Hiroshi Jofuku, he's pulling some strings, and things are working out for his side. And, I guess he's shown some faith in some young players, and he's been rewarded with some pretty decent performances, while also getting, great contributions from the likes of Yoshifumi Kashiwa and, of course, Douglas Vieira, who netted the winner here in the 80th minute. And as Sam has said, both the goals after Hiroshima had to come from behind were assisted by Kashiwa, who would be a very strong shout, I would say, for the J1 Best 11 as well, as things stand with 5 games left in the season. Kawabe equalised 9 minutes into the second half, and I think that's goals in 2 straight games for him. And Hiroshima, well, they'd these kind of musical chairs between 4th and 6th in the table with Hiroshima, Cerezo Osaka, and Kawasaki, and that's how they've ended up in the table after match day 29. Hiroshima have moved back up to 4th in the table, and I guess, Sam, we're not writing off the title chances of those three clubs. But, Hiroshima sit 6 points behind the top two as things stand, and a little bit of a goal difference, probably too much to make up on Kashima. So that means they'd have to make up 7 points in the last 5 games over Antlers, while also having to climb over both Yokohama and FC Tokyo. So, we're certainly not putting a line through these three clubs, I don't think, are we? But it does appear, especially in the case of Hiroshima and Cerezo, who have been on excellent runs, they might have just left their run a little bit too late.
Yeah, it's not impossible, but you'd think both teams and Kawasaki as well would probably have to win 4 or 5 of their remaining games and get a little bit of luck from 3 teams dropping points. I think it's unlikely, but they're still in with a chance of an ACL place. I know 4th becomes available if Kashima finish in that top 3 and then win the Emperor's Cup, and they've got a non-league team in the next round, then a J2 team in the semi-final. So you'd probably say they're favourites for that competition. So there's definitely still things to play for these three teams. I mean, there is the argument that Hiroshima and Cerezo especially don't really care about being in the ACL, but there is that to play for, and Hiroshima did to an extent this season. I think we gave them a bad rap after the first game or two, but in the end they did take it more seriously, and they did look to advance in that competition. So they will be trying to get back in there again. I think Cerezo may have a little bit more to prove. I think they've gone quite under the radar, but I think there's still excitement, even if they're not going to win the title. It seems unlikely. There's still a lot for those three sides to play for.
Yes, most definitely. So a very pleasing 3 points for Sanfrecce as they returned from Shimizu with their 2-1 win, and as I say, that took them up to fourth in the table. And Sam's just mentioned Cerezo there. They also moved above Kawasaki with an away win of their own in match day 29. In one of the other games played last Friday night, they headed up to Sapporo. So this was one of only two all top half clashes on the slate. The other, of course, was the FC Tokyo away at Kobe, who were ninth at the start of the match day and slipped into the bottom half of the table after their loss. But anyway, yeah, back to events at the Sapporo Dome. This game was settled very, very early doors by an absolute corker from Yoichiro Kakitani, who rolled back the years, Sam. He's certainly by no means a veteran of the game, but when he was bursting onto the scene with some stirring performances for Cerezo that firstly got him into the national team and then got him a big money move over to Europe, that of course did not work out at all, and saw him return to Cerezo with his tail very much between his legs, and he has never really hit any sort of heights that he did in his initial, starburst period of time with Cerezo. But, he can't have scored too many better goals than his first-time screamer from 25 yards in just the 6 minute.
No, I think since I started watching Japanese football maybe 5 years ago, I think Kakitani has been one of my biggest disappointments, because you hear about what he did before and how he burst onto the scene, but it looks like he peaked in his early 20s and he's just not really delivered anything for a while now. And I mean, he's not really been in the squad too much this season. He's got in now because of Kiyotake's injury. He still hasn't done a great deal, but then he just turned up with an absolute thunderbolt to kind of settle this game pretty early on. I think Cerezo are another team that they're kind of ploughing on despite a load of injuries. They had to call up two under-23 players just to fill out a squad for this week. So they've done well with that. I think they've kind of got a little bit fortunate in that. I know it's not nice to say that Desabato's injury is fortunate, but it's allowed Souza to come into midfield, their best player by a country mile, in my opinion. So I think that's galvanised them a bit as well. And they so well organised under Lotta, they're not going to concede many. And this game, they scored early and never really looked like conceding a goal again. Sapporo had a few kind of minor-ish injuries, and then Chanatip's injury as well, but they were kind of keeping everyone wrapped in cotton wool ahead of the League Cup final, so they didn't really have the quality to really threaten Cerezo too much. And I think it was just another professional performance, but as you say, the run I think has been timed a little bit too late for any serious title push, but they're probably the form team in the second half of the season.
Yeah, most definitely. And their next three games, we've obviously talked about the remaining fixtures for the top three in the table. Yeah, their next three are Matsumoto and Shonan, both at home, current occupants of the bottom three, and then Kobe away in a Kansai derby. So with Shimizu and Oita to follow. So, I mean, you could see Cerezo run the table there, and that would obviously put some pressure on the top three. But they have been pretty good value for their excellent run of form, as Sam has said, in the second half of the season. Yeah, I guess the football isn't always that dynamic, but Kakitani's ripping off belters like that winner in this game, then fair play to them. So what about Sapporo, Sam? You mentioned there the League Cup final. They have qualified for a major final for the first time in their history after beating Gamba Osaka on away goals in the semi-finals in the last week and a half or so. The second leg was played last Sunday. This loss has seen them slip behind Oita in the table and down to eighth. Obviously, they're not going to be in any sort of relegation trouble with so many teams below them still, although they've only just gotten to 40 points, which is usually the safe number. I don't know, do you think, have they taken their eye off the ball in this game, and they're more concerned with trying to win a first major trophy, which I suppose in some respects you could understand when their safety is assured and they're in no danger of threatening the ACL places. So again, yeah, it's a cliche to say that they didn't need this game and they weren't as up for it as Cerezo were, but I guess overall the supporters that rocked up on the Friday night will have been disappointed that they didn't build on the momentum of qualifying for their first major final in keeping the good times rolling, if you like.
Yeah, I think there is a case that they were looking forward. I don't think they've actually played very well for a long while now. They only just scraped through the League Cup semi-final on away goals, I believe it was, and that was via a very dull game, but a great finish from Suzuki. But they did take it as cautiously as possible with everyone. Like, they didn't play Gu Sung-yong in goal after his trek to Pyongyang and wherever he may have gone from there. And then Chanatip, they didn't rush him back. There were knocks to Arano and Bothroyd. They didn't risk them either. They took Miyazawa off for injury midway through the first half. They were just not taking any risks to try and get as fresh a team as possible for that League Cup final, which has to be their main priority this season. They're not going to make the Champions League. They're not going to get relegated. They might drop in further into the bottom half, but I don't think they're in the any serious danger. So I can understand why they'd be focusing on this League Cup final. But yeah, the form has gone a little bit haywire in the last month or two. And yeah, they're not going into that final in any great form.
Well, and interestingly enough, easy for you to say, their opponents in Saturday's Levain Cup final are also battling a bit themselves. Kawasaki Frontale made it through after a dominant performance over two legs against Kashima, winning 3-1 on aggregate. All of those goals that came in the home leg, the first leg. Kawasaki absolutely battered Antlers in the second leg, but were unable to score, and Antlers were unable to fashion anything really going forward, as that ended at 0-0. I think it was 17 shots to 2 or something like that, Sam. But Frontale were satisfied to make it through to their fifth League Cup final. They are yet to win the competition. So, a new champion will be crowned this coming Saturday. It will be either a Sapporo winning the final at the first time of asking, or a Frontale finally lifting the trophy after being beaten in the final on four different occasions. So it is always a big occasion, the League Cup final, and we'll talk about it a little bit more towards the end of the episode. But for now, we mentioned that Sapporo in an ordinary run of form, and Kawasaki similarly after a 2-2 draw away at Gunma Osaka on Saturday. Gunma took a very early lead in just the fifth minute through Kazuma Watanabe, but that doesn't tell half the story after Kosuke Onose's shot amazingly hit the bar twice before Watanabe tapped it in. A 25-yard drive from Onose hit the bar, bounced down, and hit the bar again before bouncing back out into play. Watanabe with the easiest goal he'll ever score. But Frontale turned the game around in the second half with Ryota Oshima levelling 6 minutes after the break with a Leandro assist. And then the man himself, Leandro, fired through Masaki Higashiguchi in the 63rd minute to give Frontale the lead. But Gunma bounced straight back, though. Shu Kurata headed them level just 2 minutes later, though I doubt he'll remember it after he was concussed following a clash of heads with Kyohei Noborisato, and I believe a fractured or a broken cheekbone was the damage there for Kurata. We wish him a speedy recovery, a courageous goal, and an unfortunate accident that they're coming together with Noborisato. For Gunma, that was a point that actually took them all the way up into the top half of the table. They now head up a group of five teams on 35 points. Gunma ninth, all the way down to 13th place Shimizu. They all have 35 points. Echoes of last season, of course, Sam, when five teams finished the J1 campaign level on 41 points, and of course it was Iwata who finished off the worst of those and had to play Tokyo Verde in the promotion relegation playoff. But Gunma will be pleased to edge their way up into the top half of the table, although they're still only 4 points out of the promotion relegation spot themselves. But for Frontale, as we said with Hiroshima and Cerezo, it looks like there's a little bit too much traffic for them to climb over now. They're certainly not in as good a run of form as both Sanfrecce and Cerezo. So their dream of a third straight league title looks pretty much dashed as they sit to 8 points back with five to play.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's that middle part of the season where Onyeki just decided to just keep changing his team up constantly, never settling on anything. Because in the last few games, if you take the League Cup fixtures, and then even this fixture to a degree, they're a fairly settled side. They've looked a lot better. They should have won this game. Ianaga missed two absolutely glorious opportunities at the end. They should have won it. But even after, because that second goal for Gamba with the head injuries and whatnot, it kind of took the wind out of the sails of the game somewhat, I think. There was good reaction from everyone because Karata was knocked out pretty much instantly, so they kind of protected his neck, got him off quickly, and then the same with Noborizato, who kind of was a little bit, not instant, but you could tell he was shaken up as well, so no one took any risk with either of them, get them off the pitch, because you have seen on occasion before players will be concussed or knocked out and then try and play on, and that's always dangerous, so I'm glad that both were seen to pretty quickly and they weren't allowed to continue. But yeah, Kawasaki, I thought they played okay in this game, but they'll be very disappointed not to have come through it. Gamba were without Sami and Adam Ilson, both through injury, and those are their two main attacking players. Then Karata went off as well. So yeah, I thought they played okay. I thought they're finally using Leandro Damian the way he's supposed to be. You don't all, because they were worried about trying to play him and Kobayashi together. They've decided they're not going to do that, but at least they used him properly. They don't always just hoof it into him. He can play with his feet as well. Like, the first goal for Oshima is because of a long ball into him, and he's nodded it down, and Oshima does what Oshima does because he's a great player, and scored his goal. I'm so glad to have him back playing football again. But and then the second goal, it just shows how good Damian is with his feet. He took it well, he controlled it, a really nice finish, so. But they haven't used him enough, and that's the problem, I think, with Frontale. Because they signed such a good player at the start of the season, and he looked good in the Super Cup at the start of the season, but they've just not used him enough. They've not figured out how to... It's like they signed him without really knowing what they were going to do with him. And because it's taken them so long to figure it out, they've not really clicked into any sort of consistent form. And, yeah, I think... And unless they win all five, and then... something madness happens above them. They've got no chance, in my opinion, of retaining their title. But I don't know, will a first Louvain Cup satisfy the Frontale supporters who have just been after two consecutive league title victories? I'm not sure it will.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Yeah, they've obviously come close on several different occasions, so to finally lift the trophy. It might be some sort of a consolation. Not too many teams get to win trophies in the course of a particular season. So to lift one is an achievement in itself. And obviously, yeah, it doesn't hold a candle to taking the league title over the course of 34 games as they've done in two consecutive years. But yeah, I'm sure the supporters will enjoy their day out on Saturday and be very, very happy, of course, if they do lift the trophy. It obviously doesn't make it a successful season in itself, considering what they've done the last 2 years. But yes, it does promise to be a great occasion. And one set of fans will be absolutely blowing the roof off the Saitama Stadium on a Saturday afternoon as they, either Sapporo or Kawasaki lift the Louvain Cup for the first time. Another team from J1 who is looking to lift a major title this year are, of course, Urawa Reds. They're a long way from the Louvain Cup final or the J1 title for that matter, of course, but they do have the not-so-small matter of the Asian Champions League semi-final second leg coming up this Wednesday night. So with that game in mind, they were scheduled to play on Friday night. The third of the games played last Friday at home against Oita. In terms of positions on the table, this was one of the picks for the games of the round, as the Reds were 10th at kickoff and Oita were 8th. Well, the gap has widened after a frantic finish at Saitama Stadium saw Oita Trinita run out 1-0 winners away at Urawa. As I've said briefly earlier, that win has taken Oita above Sapporo in the table and back up to 7th, while Reds are a part of that ruck of teams on 35 points, and they actually slipped a couple of spots in the table from 10th down to 12th. Yeah, there was plenty happening here, Sam. Obviously, Reds played, of course, with one eye on this coming Wednesday night when they head to China with a 2-0 lead, of course, from the home first leg. But well, yeah, I don't know if you want to talk about too much about the game itself, but it was, as I said, a frantic finish as Oita basically countered from their own box. A shot came in from a Reds player in the 93rd minute, and as Oita tried to counter, basically they gave the ball back to Reds on about three separate occasions, didn't they? But every time the ball broke loose, it broke to an Oita player. It was finally swept forward, and Yuto Misao's cross from the left was a perfectly placed to meet the run of the tireless Yusuke Goto, who headed in to spark absolutely monumental scenes. Basically, everybody involved with Trinita just headed off into in front of the away end, and they celebrated like it was 1999.
I mean, it was the scrappiest counterattack you've ever seen. It should have been stopped about three times. As you said, just pinball wizard all the way up. But then eventually it turned into a quality cross and header, but it kind of represented the entire game. It was just a bit all over the place. I think first half, Reds defensively were a bit shaky, and Nishikawa, who I actually thought was playing okay this season, he was a little bit all over the place as well. And Oita, I think they're just playing with a bit of freedom. They're quite open at the moment, and it makes for decent games, but Reds just couldn't get anything started. In the end, in the second half, they had a few good chances. They probably were in the ascendancy before the scrappy counter-attack. But I think, I'm not 100% sure on this stat, but I don't think they've won at all on a Friday night heading into a Champions League game this season, and that's cost them. And then I think the Champions League is, like, I think they'll go through on Wednesday. They've got that 2-0 lead at home. I think they'll do enough to get through, but then their fixture list is a nightmare. They've got Antlers away, Hiroshima away, Frontale at home, Tokyo away, and then Gamba at home. Plus you've got to mix in a two-legged Asian Champions League final, including a trip across to the Middle East. I think they're in a lot of danger. I mean, they're at 4 points clear at the moment, and maybe Shonan won't get enough points to put them under threat, but you could easily see Reds not coming away with a victory in those five games. So it's quite difficult to see for Reds. I think even in that game, Kuroki missed a pretty easy chance, and when he's not on form as well, I mean, then Reds don't have much hope in league fixtures at the moment. So it's just been such a weird season for Reds, and I don't know really where they go from next season. Otsuki is a Champions League winning manager, but has taken them to within the brink of relegation. I mean, what do they do as a board? Do they see it as a success and keep with him, or do they, as I should think they should do and should have done a long time ago, do they change manager? I think it's going to be a very interesting off-season should Reds survive.
Well, yeah, that is very much up in the air, isn't it? As you say, the outline the fixtures there, it's very hard to see where their next league win is coming from. It's been a very, very trying season in the league for Reds. Of course, they do have that massive carrot of the ACL, but winning that competition, I believe, doesn't get them qualified for it again next year. Of course, they didn't make it after they won it in 2017. So, they won't be back in continental play next year. And, as far as we know, they might be in J2, as you say, Sam, with, five very testing league fixtures to come. But we do wish Reds the very best of luck away at Guangzhou Evergrande on Wednesday night. As we said, 2-0 up from the first leg, and hoping to make it through to their second final in 3 years as they chase a third ACL crown. That would be absolutely spectacular. Good luck to Reds, and well done to Oita. Their celebrations were epic, and their season as a whole has been epic of course, as they sit seventh in the table when we all had them not penciled in for 18th. I think we all had them in permanent marker, but they have defied expectations all the way through this year. And, yeah, after a very, very flat run, they have now lost just one of their last six. As Sam said, they're playing with the handbrake slightly slightly released, at times at least, and yeah, things have been slightly more exciting. With their J1 safety well and truly secured, but now as we start to as we talk about Reds, basically Sam, from here we're segueing on to the relegation dogfight. So we will have a bit more to say about Shonan and Matsumoto. But first, there were two huge games in the relegation battle played on Saturday in Nagoya and in Iwata. The first one was at Grampus hosting Sendai. This was at 13th hosting 14th at the start of the match day. But, with both of them really struggling for form, in Nagoya's case, it's obviously a massive understatement. Something had to give, and it was Sendai who made the perfect start when Yasuhiro Hiraoka's header gave them a 7th-minute lead, and then late on, Takuma Abe was brought down in the box by his former FC Tokyo teammate Yuichi Maruyama, and Ramon Lopez fired in the penalty off the fingertips of Mitch Langerak, who was a bit unlucky here. He might have had Hiraoka's header covered early doors, but unfortunately for him, Kosuke Ota diverted the ball past him, and then Langerak did get fingertips to Ramon Lopez's penalty, but was unable to keep it out. So for Grampus, I mean, this is just an absolute horror show, Sam. It goes without saying. It's one win in 18. As they slipped further down the table, they're now 14th. They took a Sendai's position in the table. At the moment, there are four teams worse off than them. But in terms of the runs of form that they've all been on, nobody compares to Grampus. They are absolutely shedding water at a remarkable rate. And I don't know, do they have anything about them? You can see them staying out of the bottom three. Is it just that there are three worse teams than them?
I mean, personnel-wise, I don't think they should be that close to relegation at all. But obviously, once you get into this spiral of form, then it's difficult to get out of it. And they changed the manager, which I think they had to change the manager. As much as I enjoy watching Kazuma football, I think he was tactically a little bit messed up in his thinking. Like, if there was a defensive injury, just put an attacker in there and just keep attacking until hopefully that goes well, but they were just conceding goals. But I don't agree with the change of manager to Ficcadenti. Like, maybe in the winter, where you've got like 6 weeks to prepare a team for a completely different brand of football, but to expect Nagoya's players to go from all-out attack with Kazuma to pretty much ultra-defensive with Ficcadenti, I don't think it's possible. I don't think he has the players there that are able to play that formation. I know they got two draws with Hiroshima and they did with Oita. But, yeah, now it's, they just kind of look, they're limiting themselves. And the quality in Nagoya's team is in attack. So I think you have to use it. I think especially at this stage of the season, you have to win games. And I don't think just sitting back and defending is going to do it for Nagoya, because defensively they're not good enough. They're going to concede chances. They're just individual mistakes that are going to cost them. And they really frustrate me, Nagoya, because they should be a lot better than they are. They were top at one stage, and I think Sean Carroll has a lot to answer for, because after his post about how good Nagoya were doing, I don't think they've won many games since. They've just plummeted from first down to 14th, and they may go even further. So that's, they're really difficult. They're another enigma, a bit like Reds. I think they should be doing a lot better than they are, but I don't really know what to say, to be honest.
They're in a disastrous run of form, and there you go. You haven't cornered the market on ordinary predictions then. You were throwing Sean Carroll under the bus there. fair enough.
Someone has to join me under
fair
that
bus. Too. Early doors. I mean, they were in the top two for, the first few months of the season, weren't they? So, to fall off a cliff as they have is absolutely remarkable. And you use the word frustrating there. And I think, yeah, the frustrations were well and truly starting to boil over on the terraces at full time. We mentioned earlier on about Sean Madoy having a little bit of a coming together with the Antlers Ultras after Kashima played away in Matsumoto on Friday night. Scott McIntyre put me on to, Takuji Yonemoto, the Grampus midfielder, having a bit of a to-do with some of the Grampus Ultras as well. I mean, you can understand the fans' frustration after this horror run of games, but obviously Yonemoto, who always wears his heart on his sleeve, will be feeling their frustration very keenly himself, of course. I mean, he has to live through this on a day-to-day basis. But, we've seen in a couple of instances, passionate support from the terraces, going a little bit sour as players react, as you can understand, to, not so much encouragement from the supporters that they're used to that from.
Yeah, I mean, it is getting to that stage of the season where every win matters, every game matters, and it's felt passionately by these passionate sets of supporters. So you can understand where both sets of people are coming from, if it's the players or the fans. They've got their right to vent their frustration. And, I mean, if you're going to vent frustration at any team, it isn't Nagoya for the way they completely dropped off a cliff and don't ever look like kind of righting the ship at the moment. There's like that game, it's the Galta Sendai were a pretty average team, and at no point really did Nagoya look like they were getting on top of that game, and that's a game that they should be, especially at home. And I don't want to criticise for a lack of effort, because I'm sure there is effort there, but it just doesn't look like it from a supporter's point of view. You don't think that Nagoya are necessarily playing to their full capabilities, and I can understand why that's frustrating. And they've got to try and dig in a little bit for the end of this season. They've managed to do it last season, just about, against Shonan on the final day, so they need some sort of grit a bit like that to get themselves out of their current hole.
Yes, indeed. So, we're talking about the relegation zone here, and so, we better not forget to give Sendai a positive mention, Sam. It appears that they're just going to do enough whenever they're cornered and look like they might be in danger of dropping in to the bottom three. They just seem to eke out the result that they need. They'd come in with a one win in their past five games, but this is a priceless 3 points that takes them into the right into the middle of this clutch of teams on 35 points. So, I mean, I had Sendai in my bottom three in the J-Pred at the start of the season, but they just appear to have enough street smarts about them to know when to push, and they've got a knack of just pulling out a result when they need it.
Yeah, they're a very similar team to Shonan in that the players there are pretty average. They're probably one of the worst teams in there, same as Shonan, but the manager just seems to get enough out of them. He squeezes that little bit extra that keeps them afloat, as Cho did for Shonan. I think now that's gone, that's a real massive blow for Shonan, which probably sees them, down. But Sendai can get that little bit extra out of them. I don't think they have many, quality players. They've got a few decent ones. I think Shimao Mate is really important at the back. He was back after suspension in this game. He shores that up. And, looks quite a dominant player. I mean, when you sign a player from Mozambique who hasn't played for the national team for a few years, you don't really expect much. But he's been one of the surprises of the season. I think, he's helped them. They're solid enough. They don't get smashed too often. They've got enough goals about them that, they'll win enough games to stay up, because, they're quite inconsistent. But, as you say, when push comes to shove, they can usually eke out a result.
Yes, indeed. So the last game of the match day was, pretty much last chance saloon time for a Jubilo Iwata, the bottom club, of course. They came into the match day 10 points behind the promotion relegation place, and indeed 7 points behind Matsumoto, who were above them in 17th. They hosted Tosu, who was 16th at kickoff. Saga knew that if they'd won this game, they could have gone all the way up to 14th if other results went for them. They made an excellent start with Isaac Cuenca giving them a 12-minute lead after a bit of an extended 1-2 with Mu Kanazaki. A few extra touches for Kanazaki and a nutmeg to set up Cuenca for his lovely finish. But then Iwata equalised in first half stoppage time with the new foreign striker Lukian heading in his first J1 goal. A very good header it was too, from a decent amount of distance to steer it into the top corner. But that man, Namu Kanazaki, who set up Tosu's opener, was not to be denied. And in the 67th minute, a determined run across the box saw him fend off three defenders before he lashed home a powerful finish. So, Tosu were dreaming of another 3 points after, of course, they'd beaten FC Tokyo in the previous match day. But, we talked about Arthur Silva's spectacular goal for FC Tokyo away at Kobe. Well, just about matching him, I would say, Sam, for goal of the round and a contender for goal of the season was Dailton's spectacular bicycle kick from out towards the edge of the penalty area in the 84th minute. His first goal in 5 months, and what a way to score it. A remarkable strike to equalise at 2-2, and he even had another chance. He had a crack at another bicycle kick towards the end of the game, but was off the mark. But you've got to admire Iwata here for battling on, Sam, but it's all just going to be for naught, isn't it? Because they're simply too far back. And, I guess for the story out of this game is Tosu's frustration at letting a lead slip so late.
Yeah, I think full credit to Jubilo. They definitely didn't give up. They scored quite late goals. They probably at the end of the game, they probably were the better team going into the final few minutes, but yeah, I think it's probably too little too late for them. I think you could tell by just the supporters in the ground, because like the Matsumoto game, it was quite horrible conditions. Like, it wasn't nice, but as Matsumoto, their fans obviously have belief and they were all there. And the Yamaha Stadium was almost half empty, which is so rare for that ground, which is usually one of the more packed grounds. It's quite small and compact. They usually make a good noise, but yeah, to see it half empty was just, it shows where Jubilo are at the moment. It's so difficult to see any way that they can get out of this, but they definitely battled. The game had four incredible goals. Adelton's obviously the best of them, but it wasn't in keeping necessarily with the rest of the game and the quality that was shown for the rest of it. But yeah, good battling performance from Jubilo, but I think they probably had to win this game. As for Tosu, at least they got themselves out of the relegation places with that draw, but they'll see it as a missed opportunity again to just put a little bit of breathing space ahead of Belmare, because, yeah, they're still right in it. I think Tosu will probably survive. I think they've got a lot more than Belmare at this moment in time. It's so difficult to see where Belmare's victories are going to come from. They've got no confidence at all. They've just, they conceded 14-3. It's just, yeah, I can't really see how they bounce back from that. But, I mean, this is the J-League, so you would never know. And, I mean, Matsumoto are coming into reasonable form, much better than, they're much closer than I imagined they would be maybe 5 or 6 games ago. So it's still all to play for.
Yeah, most definitely. So, yeah, as you say, Tosu out of the bottom three, and that is for the first time since match day 13. They have, been down in the muck for quite a while, and as it stands, they're only a point outside the promotion relegation spot. But, I'm sure the air is a lot clearer for them now with they're out of that dirty relegation promotion spot. And, they can look up, although, they will be frustrated here after they had become the comeback kings, of course, in recent games. Their performances against Urawa and, of course, FC Tokyo in the last league game. But, they were the victims here as Iwata, came from behind to, earn themselves a deserved point. That is probably not going to help them all that much at the end of the day. So that's all of the games wrapped up, Sam. Now let's try and put a bow on the relegation dogfight. As I've said on numerous occasions, we now have five teams grouped together on 35 points, headed up by Gunma Osaka in ninth. Behind them, Kobe, Sendai, Reds, and Shimizu. So just quickly, a question without notice. Which one of those five is in the most danger of slipping down, and whether they will be one of the three worst teams is up for debate, and we're going to talk about that in the coming minutes. But which one of those do you think will finish off the worst, I guess, is a better way to phrase that question.
Yeah, I don't think they're the worst team of the five, but I think Reds are in trouble. I think their fixture list is horrific. If you add the ACL in, it's going to get... They're going to have that distraction as well. I don't think they believe they're going to go down. And it might be taking their eye off the ball a little bit, looking at the ACL, that kind of drags them into trouble. It's just because I don't think Shonan are going to get the points, so I don't think they're going to go down. But I think... Of that group, I see wins for the other teams more easily than I do for Reds.
Yeah, fair enough. I would tend to agree with you there. So, yeah, those other teams between 9th and 13th in the table, all on 35 points. So below them, Nagoya are in 14th on 33, Tosu 15th on 32, and then in the promotion relegation playoff spot in 16th, Shonan have 31. With Matsumoto in the first automatic relegation spot on 29 and Iwata bottom on 22. So I guess the major interest here is whether or not Matsumoto are going to be able to dig themselves out, Sam, because it's just one loss in seven now. Included in there, as we mentioned earlier on at the beginning of the podcast, are draws against the current top two in the league. At home, FC Tokyo first, and then this past Friday against the leaders, Kashima. So, yes, we know that their football is not the easiest on the eye, and it certainly does not appeal to one of the more regular guests on this podcast. I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure he won't acknowledge this, but surely Scott McIntyre would have to acknowledge that points earned in draws against the top two in the table are a massive credit to this team of battlers. I mean, regardless of whether you like the coach or not, the players are battling for him on a week-to-week basis, and as limited as he is tactically and as limited as his group of players are. I mean, for me, you just have to admire the way they're battling this out, because, yeah, they could have given up 6 weeks ago, but instead they've decided to dig in, and, that's what they do, isn't it? They dig in. But, yeah, they're starting to get some benefits from it, and they have to play Tosu and Shonan in the run-in. So if they're going to start... If they're going to win a couple of games towards the end of the season, then they are two perfect opportunities, and could ultimately see them finish above at least Shonan, I would wager.
Yeah, I think you've got to give full credit to them. Their defensive record is really good. It's put them in the top half, I'd say, on defensive records. Only conceded 32 goals when you consider Shonan have conceded 57. And they keep themselves in games. That's going to be key for them for the next five games. They're never really out of it. Then very rarely for two or three goals behind. So they only need one chance, usually, to get a point at least, or maybe even three. So, and they've got the fixtures where they can probably do it. You could even see Shonan not winning at all. Maybe they will, but you could see maybe three draws could possibly be enough to take Yamago up into that relegation playoff place. And I think they'd consider that to be a victory. Because, I mean, it's so heavily weighted in favour of the J1 team. So you're almost, it's not quite as good as safety, but you'd be pretty confident of staying up in that position. So I think they're right in with a chance. I know Serginho went off injured. I think if he was injured long term and missed most of the rest of the season, I think they'd be in trouble, because he's the only real player with a bit of flair, a little bit about him that can take on a defence. He can conjure something up from nothing, which is kind of what they have to do given they attack so rarely. So they're going to have to try and find a little bit more from maybe the likes of Sugimoto and Machida and Nagai, because they're going to have to attack teams more. But they did so for the first half against Kashima, and they'll take confidence from that. And you can't rule them out at all, and I wouldn't be surprised if they overtook Shonan.
Yeah, and so, wrapping up this part of the podcast, what about Shonan? Are you... I guess whether you have to feel sorry for them is the right word. Obviously, this investigation into... Chalky J, well, if it had to be done, it had to be done. But the timing was obviously absolutely horrendous for Shonan. When Cho took charge of Shonan for the last time, it was in match day 22, and they beat Iwata 3-2. That saw Shonan 11th in the table on 29 points. And here we are 7 games later. They have slid 5 spots in the table and taken just 2 points from 21 available. So, it's an absolute horror show for Bomare. I used the term rudderless earlier on when I was introducing the Kanagawa Derby at Mitsuzawa, Sam. You could see them not winning. You just said that yourself. I mean, their fixtures are Gamba at home, then Cerezo and FC Tokyo away. They finish with their final home game of the season in the next to last round is at home against Hiroshima before they finish away at Matsumoto. And just like FC Tokyo and Yokohama could be a title decider on the final day of the season, so too could Shonan's visit to Matsumoto. That could decide either who finishes in the second automatic relegation spot or who finishes in 16th and has to play the playoff winner in J2. But Shonan, they've just fallen off a cliff in remarkable circumstances, and they just look a broken team.
They do. They're just lacking confidence. But I mean, this league is weird. And then the next game is at home to Gamba Osaka. And I think if they're going to stay up outright, I think they have to win that game. And it's just the alone game on the Sunday. There's something about that game that I think Shonan could get something from, which doesn't make any logical sense. But I think that game is crucial for them. If they don't win that, then their next 3 games are horrible. And they'd probably still be in with a chance away at Matsumoto, but that crowd at Yamagata might just carry them home. So next game for Bomare is absolutely vital.
Most definitely. All right. So, don't worry, Sam. I'm not going to nail you down for predictions on who's going to finish 16th or 17th. I'm sure we both expect Iwata to end up bottom at this stage. So, yes, we won't embarrass ourselves with any more rubbish predictions. I include myself, obviously, in that number as well. So, we'll wrap things up with a very brief look ahead at what's coming up in Japanese football in the next week or so. As we mentioned in the last J1 podcast, J1 takes another break this weekend for, of course, the Levain Cup final that is on Saturday at the Saitama Stadium. It's a 1 o'clock kickoff with Sapporo playing Kawasaki. One of those two teams will lift the trophy for the first time in their history, and I hope all the supporters enjoy their day out on Saturday. But before that, though, of course, we have Reds in action in China against the Guangzhou Evergrande in the second leg of the Champions League semi-final. Urawa 2-0 up from the first leg. And also on Wednesday night, we have the Emperor's Cup quarterfinals. I believe they'll all be played on Wednesday night. Sam can correct me if I'm wrong. Sam has mentioned in passing before at the start of the podcast that the Kashima are in action against Honda FC of the JFL, and in their half of the draw, Nagasaki will host Kofu in an all J2 matchup. So that guarantees that we will have a J2 side in the Emperor's Cup semi-finals, and if Honda FC can shock the world and beat Antlers, we would have a JFL team versus a J2 team in the semi-finals. That would be absolutely remarkable, but I wouldn't put any money on that, listeners. On the other side of the draw, Kobe will host Oita, and it's a Tosu hosting Shimizu in the other game. So 4 clubs. Obviously Oita have had a terrific season in J1, but Kobe, Tosu and Shimizu, they've all done very well to work their way through to this stage of the competition, and obviously a massive understatement, they'll all be hoping to make it through to the semi-finals. What a ridiculous thing to say. Better move on. We'll see how those games play out, and hopefully remember to touch on the results in the next podcast. Sam, I did say at the start that I hoped we would be able to talk about the Japan national team, but we're getting on for 2 hours here, so we'll just mention that Japan won their 2 qualifiers very comfortably, although the away game last week in Tajikistan had its moments. A big save from Shuichi Gonda at 1-0. But Takumi Minamino continues to stake his claim as the main man for Japan. Was it 3 goals for him across the course of the 2 games? Ultimately comfortable qualifying victories for the Samurai Blue.
Yeah, I think pretty straightforward. I think this whole section is going to be pretty straightforward, and for Japan it's not the most interesting as it can be for other teams in this section of the qualification. But yeah, Japan just kind of easing through at the moment. I really would like a bit more rotation. I think you've got to use these games to try out younger players, but Moriyasu doesn't seem to agree with me. You can pretty much pick 10 of the 11 at the moment, so it's a little disappointing. I'd like to see Kubo get a few more minutes rather than 3 at the end of the game and whatnot. But yeah, I think it's been fairly professional so far for Japan, and they'll get through to the next stage without any real issues.
Actually, well, I was thinking we were going to wrap it up, Sam, but I mean, it's a podcast, so we can go for as long as we like. So, just before we leave Japan, as an FC Tokyo supporter, obviously I've been interested in seeing not only the ruck of former FC Tokyo players continuing to get called up and make the most of their opportunities when they're presented, but the fact that Kento Hashimoto now appears to have at least a permanent squad position under Moriyasu, and indeed I think he started both of the games in both of the last 2 international breaks, hasn't he? So whether he's a placeholder for an injured central midfielder that Moriyasu might have his eye on for the later stages of World Cup qualifying or not, Hashimoto certainly has the jersey at the moment. And as a neutral, I'm interested to hear what you've thought about his performances. I mean, he's not the sort of flashy player that tends to catch the eye all that much, but he is quite an effective central midfielder who's capable of spreading the ball around quite well. So, I don't want to lead you into an answer. What have you made of him in his last few appearances for Japan?
I think he's done pretty well. I think he's kind of taken over from Wataru Endo, who was the previous placeholder. Because I still think that Misao or Oshima should be the other midfielder next to Shibasaki. But I can't fault Kento Hashimoto. He's deserved it from his performances this season. As you say, he does the kind of, not necessarily the glamorous stuff, but he shields pretty well in front of the defence. He's good with the ball. You can trust him with possession, and he's usually going to find a teammate. He doesn't do anything over elaborate, but that's probably a good thing in his position. I think his positioning itself is very good. So I've been pretty satisfied with him. Obviously, Japan haven't faced any real threat at the moment, so it'd be interesting to see how he plays when we get to the next phase. Say if Japan have to face Iran or Australia or someone like that, then it might be a bigger test of his abilities. But so far he hasn't really put a foot wrong, and yeah, he's looked at home in a Japan jersey.
All right then, yeah, it's good to hear. And as a Tokyo supporter, as I said, glad that he's been given the opportunity, and yeah, he appears to have grabbed it for the time being at least. All right then, well, that is our extended look at all of the action from J1 Matchday 29. It was a very eventful round of games from start to finish, last of Friday night through to Saturday in the evening. It was plenty happening, lots of quality goals, and obviously big implications at both ends of the table. So Sam, it's been absolutely brilliant to catch up with you. Glad you made it back from the US in one piece and not completely bankrupt, although bank balance might have taken a pretty sizable hit by the sounds of things. But great to have you back on the podcast this week. Thanks as always for sharing your thoughts on J1 and Japanese football, and I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
All right then, so that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. My thanks again to Sam Robson and Stuart Woodward, and of course to you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up the Levain Cup final and also how Urawa have gotten on in the Champions League semi-finals. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk podcast.